Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. This week, we have Kevin Stewart, who is the owner and founder of StocksForTheWeek.com. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Miranda. It's a pleasure to be on the show and speak with you and your listeners today.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things that you do on Stocks for the Week is you have what is called a safety score. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that today, about what your safety score is and then how it can be used in an investing strategy. So why don't you first give us a quick overview of the safety score?
I developed this concept of a safety score about 5 years ago when I started this company. I think people have trouble differentiating between what a good company is and what's an attractive price to invest in that company. So I tried to come up with a concept that was quantitative and precise in nature to try to make that differentiation. You know, we happen to be speaking today when the Federal Reserve is looking to raise interest rates for the first time in 9 years. So if people didn't think about safety in their investments beforehand, with interest rates constantly going down, now is probably a good time for them to start thinking about it in addition to other things that they think about.
So what is taken into account when you're talking about safety score? You talk about trying to find a good company at a good price.
Yes.
What kind of things are taken into account when you create the safety score?
Sure. Well, we look at typical income statement balance sheet items that a financial analyst would look at. So, for example, the price earnings ratio, what you actually pay for stocks, a company's earnings, we look at that. A low price earnings ratio is better than a high price earnings ratio. We look at growth. We look at what's the sales growth, what's the earnings growth. High growth is better than low growth. We look at leverage. So if a company has very little debt, that would be considered much better than if it had a lot of debt. Other typical ratios, return on assets, return on equity, high returns on assets or equity would be considered better than low. So we take about 20 factors and then we put them into this formula and it spits out a number for every company. And we actually look at about 2,400 companies and it gives us a score. We take those company scores and we build them up for industry scores. And we take those industry scores and we build them up for all the major sectors in the market. So at a glance, people can get a good feeling of our opinion of which sectors are safest, which industries are safest, and of course, which companies. So we think it's a very valuable input.
Okay, so it's sort of kind of like a compilation of all of these different factors distilled into one score that can help you compare different companies as well as different sectors. The sector comparison is interesting to me because, as we all know, I index. So that could add a kind of a different depth to my indexing strategy.
Okay.
When people are investing, how can they use the safety score to figure out which investments to focus on, or how can they incorporate this into their portfolio?
It's a very important part of our website. So if they go on to StocksForTheWeek.com, they'll see an investor dashboard and they'll see an area where they can go and look at the safety scores. And immediately they will see a box of 8 color-coded safety scores, basically all of the 8 major sectors of the market that we have visually shown where people can see what the most attractive sectors are. Right now, the most attractive ones would be considered technology, the financial sector, and the service sector. Those would be the most attractive. The most unattractive would probably be basic materials, industrial goods, and utilities. Now, if I look at technology, let's look at this for an example, because we consider that to be the safest sector. And when I say safe, we're not saying you couldn't lose money in this. You can lose money on any stocks. But if you had to purchase a stock and hold it for 5 years, or purchase a sector and hold it for 5 years, this would be our recommendation right now on December 16, 2015, to look at that. So we can click into this technology box, which has the highest sector score, and then it will show a breakdown of five industries within technology, which we think are also very safe. So I'll just go through the first one, but it's the semiconductor memory chips industry. And there are, as you said, because you're an indexer, there are a lot of different ways to invest in things like this. But now that I'm looking at the semiconductor stocks, there is a plus button to the right. And if I click on that, it'll actually give me three stocks: Micron Technology, Rambus Incorporated, and Integrated Silicon Solutions. So technology, printed circuit boards, and then there's three companies there: Jabil Circuit, JBL, Celestica, CLS, and Plexus Corp, PLXS. Whether you were interested in what we thought was the best sector or the best industry or the best stocks, it's all here for you in just a few clicks. And we have that for all eight sectors, and then we look at five of the best industries in each sector. So at a glance, we're giving you a suggestion on up to 40 industries out of the 200 we cover that we think are relatively safe. And since there are about three companies in each industry, we're giving you approximately 100 suggestions of stocks that are relatively safe. And this doesn't change day to day. It's pretty stable. It may change a couple times during the year. So these are more long-term opinions.
Right. So that's good to know, that it's more about planning for the future and not day trading. This isn't your day trading.
No, this is not. This would be more if you had to put it in account and you couldn't touch it for a few years, which a lot of experts say is the best way to invest anyway. This would be the kind of program that would help facilitate that.
Great. So how do you use the safety score in your own investing? Is this something that you do as well?
It's very important. It's very important. Now, I will say one thing, that's just one aspect of what we use. There's also a timing aspect, which is important. So a company could be relatively, quote, safe, but still trade like a dog for a few years, because it just takes a while for it to reach its value. So I don't just exclusively use this concept, but I sort of mirror it with some other things that we're using. But it's extremely important. Like, all other things being equal, I'd rather have a company that has a higher score than a lower score if everything else is lining up. May I give one quick example of sort of how I would sort of use it? In the automotive industry, there's a new glamour company, Tesla, and then there's General Motors, which has been around forever. So Tesla is a great company and may just help save the world and a lot of the neat things that they're doing. But the price of the stock is pretty high, about $230. So we assign this stock a safety score rating of 8. And that's 1 being the lowest, 99 being the highest. Now, General Motors, which we have a safety score today of 82, so obviously we consider it a lot safer than Tesla. And I'll just sort of go through a quick example, I think, that would help illustrate this point. Tesla has about $4 billion in sales, and its market value is about $29 billion. But General Motors has a market value of $54 billion. So it's basically about twice the size of Tesla. But General Motors sales are $150 billion. So we said Tesla sales were $4 billion. General Motors is $150 billion. So even though you're paying twice as much for General Motors as you are for Tesla, you're getting 40 times as much sales. That's just the kind of thing that we look at to say, over time, if this market starts to go down, for example, you probably will be, quote, safer in General Motors than you will be in Tesla, even though Tesla is a great company. So to illustrate a point to your listeners.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, Kevin, to talk about the safety score and this tool and how it can help you learn how to invest and sort of break it down and make it easier. I think a lot of a lot of investors or would-be investors get concerned about starting to invest because it seems like there's so much information they need to look at, so many balance sheets, so many ratios to concern themselves with. And it's nice to know that it can all be broken down fairly quickly and fairly easily and have it all in one place.
Yes. Well, that was our goal. We're trying to make something that's inherently a little complicated and challenging. We're trying to make it simple, and using technology in the fintech sector is helping everybody, and we're trying to do our part.
That's great. So real quick, once again, please let our listeners know where they can find you online.
Okay, that would be stocksfortheweek.com. That's stocks, plural, fortheweek.com. And we also have some apps in the App Store, iOS and Android, Stocks for the Week Trader, Stocks for the Week Investor, and a wealth calculator. So check us out. And if you have any questions, my email's there, and we'll try our best to answer your questions.
And now we'll move into the panel portion of our show. This week we have Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart. How are you doing, Linda?
I'm doing great. How are you, Miranda?
I'm on the mend.
I'm glad to hear that. Very glad to hear that. That was rough with you last week, not feeling too well and the drugs not working.
I know, it's awful.
And your poor broken arm, yes. Poor thing.
We also have Doug Goldstein with Goldstein on Geld and RichAsAKing.com. How are you doing today, Doug?
Well, I was trying to keep up with you, Miranda, and I broke a bowl the other day, sliced my pinky open, and got 7 stitches. So am I beating you, or are you still ahead on the arm-breaking thing?
Well, I'm going to be in this thing for like another 5 weeks, so I win.
You win. Okay.
Or something. Come on, Linda.
This is a contest I don't want to be a part of.
I expect next week, I expect injuries. Joe Salcihi, the other member of the crew, is out of town this week and unable to join us. But you can check him out at stackingbenjamins.com. So let's talk about this safety score idea. What do you think of this safety score idea? To me, it seemed like they were taking various factors used in fundamental analysis and then combining them to come up with one big score, kind of like a credit score for your stocks. So what did you think about this, Doug?
Well, my question about calling it a safety score is, does it give the wrong impression? Meaning if you score really high, is someone going to say, great, I could buy that stock because it scored really high and therefore I don't have to worry about losing money? Is that how the system you think works?
Yeah, and I think our guest did address that to some degree when he pointed out that it doesn't matter what the safety score is, there's still the chance of loss. And that's something you need to remember no matter what analysis tool you're using, no matter what it's calling itself, there's always a chance of loss. There's always a chance that the analysis will be wrong or that something will happen to make the analysis moot. So something to keep in mind. What about you, Linda? What did you think about this idea?
Well, it was interesting. I follow Investors Business Daily, as you know, and they do a similar score. So I was, if I were interviewing him, I would have loved to ask what was the difference between that and Investors Business Daily and their track record. To me, the safety score reminded me of Benjamin Graham, who was Warren Buffett's mentor, and his book on fundamental analysis that talks about a margin of safety. And so that's where I was thinking he was getting the word safety, but maybe not. But anyway, that's what it reminded me of, was the Benjamin Graham margin of safety concept. But, you know, it's interesting to take all these things into account. The proof is in the pudding, and really the track record and how well has it performed. And I would love to, you know, have some historical data on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Before you get too into somebody's analysis, it's a really good idea to see how well they've done.
Does it
the
work?
Best.
Yeah.
Does it work?
I think that he's looking at, I presume, something related to volatility, which is what a lot of people would convert into risk. And therefore, presumably, the stocks that he's choosing that have a better score would have a lower volatility?
I don't think so. And the reason why is because one of the examples he gave was Rambus. And I looked up Rambus's chart, and it's had a 100% swing during the last year. So it's been extremely volatile. It's been up 100 and down 50. I mean, it's been extremely volatile. So I had the same question, Doug, but when I looked at the chart on, you know, this example, it was not about volatility. So I just think it is a little confusing about what's safe, but I think they're just trying to come up with all these metrics to pick stocks. And again, it's really all about the track record. So I'm just wondering how well it's done.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's something to kind of look into, I guess, before you get too far into this or any analysis. So speaking of analysis, what types of tools or analysis tools do you use when making investing decisions? And let's go ahead and start with you, Linda. I know you mentioned Investors Business Daily. Is there something specific that you like about using that tool, or are there other tools that you use as well?
Well, what I like about Investors Business Daily is they do a lot of the same research for you. They do a lot of the number crunching and the heavy lifting. They research industries and sectors and specific stocks and the leaders in those industry, and they give numbers to it. So it's very similar in the process. But in the Investors Business Daily top 50 over the last 13 years, they've averaged about a 17.9% return versus 9.2% for the S&P 500. So they've strongly outperformed the S&P. Their technique works. And that is, you know, by reading that book, that was how I made my first million in the stock market, was by reading that book and learning how to invest from the Investors Business Daily concept. So I'm sold on that concept. I know it works. Their track record's strong. What adjustments or differences this has to that, I don't know. But that's the kind of research that I really like, is just from IBD.
Yeah, that's a great tool. What about you, Doug? What tools do you use?
I'm just thinking the tool we should use would be to get IBD to sponsor the Money Tree Investing Podcast.
Because I know. I always say, like, they should be a sponsor of mine, because I talk about them all the time and I've sold a lot of their books. But I do love them. It's solid research. It's something a lot of people don't really talk about. I don't really, for some reason, you know, I don't hear it a lot out there, but it's the best for individual investors. It's super strong.
Well, you know, Miranda, to answer the question, first of all, I, of course, always prefer to defer to money managers because they spend all their time crunching numbers. But when the time comes and I do have to start looking at stocks individually, that's when I really, frankly, I use Yahoo Finance because they have a huge amount of information. The basic information I think that someone who wants to be sort of a quasi-stock analyst should be using. And I think a lot of times people get way involved in the story and they don't even look at some of the basics, like, does this company have earnings? Do they pay a dividend? Do they regularly pay their dividend? You know, some of the very basics before you begin to dive into other questions, like looking at their revenues and looking at their balance sheet. And it sounds scary to look at a balance sheet. It's not actually a sheet, and you don't even have to worry about the balancing. You just got to see, for example, how much money do they owe? You know, if you have a company that owes, you know, $100 billion and they have no revenues, are they going to be able to pay it off? So these are the types of numbers I would look at. And frankly, I would just say, if it was my company, would I feel good about it or bad about it? If I was earning that kind of money but had these kind of expenses, or you know, if my price to book was this, would I feel like I'm running a solid company? And I think that's how people should examine stocks when they're looking to pick one.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Sometimes it's not about looking for somebody to crunch the numbers for you. It's actually getting into the data yourself and looking at it. Although, like you said, it can be a little daunting to begin. So when you make your investing decisions and you use different criteria, and we'll start with you, Doug, since you kind of mentioned balance sheets and different things, does this help you improve your ability to choose investments or asset allocations when you have different criteria to measure against?
So again, I would only use these different ratios and criteria when I'm at the point of picking individual stocks. I don't think it's so important in terms of your overall asset allocation. But I'll tell you another area that I think people need to focus on is looking at the statistics compared to other companies in the industry. I think that in the discussion, you guys spoke about car companies, and he brought up Tesla versus General Motors. I'm not sure if it's a great comparison, because I think they're in somewhat different businesses, even though they both sound automotive industries. But you need to look at comparing apples to apples, because so often you'll look at one company and it's got a, you know, it's trading at 20 times earnings, and a very similar company is trading at 12 times earnings. and, you know, look at that and realize that one of them really is a lot cheaper and it does have a much bigger safety margin than the other. So make sure you're comparing one company to the other in the same field.
That's a very good point. And what about you, Linda? What kinds of ways do you look at criteria to help you choose the right investments for you?
Well, if I'm looking at individual stocks to buy, I always look at companies that have rising earnings and rising earnings at a rising rate. So if they're growing, are they growing faster each year? And that's where, you know, that's really what I look for. Those are the sweet spot kind of companies that tend to do well year after year. And that's what I like to invest in.
Awesome. So
can I ask you a question about that?
Sure. Yeah.
You've mentioned this before. So one of the kind of popular strategies people like to talk about is the dogs of the Dow. They say just buy companies, you know, the top 10 dividend yielders on the Dow Jones. You buy it in the beginning of the year, you hold it to the end, and then rebalance it. Mm-hmm. It sounds in certain ways similar to what you're talking about, growing earnings, because one of the arguments for this strategy is that for a company to be able to pay dividends on a regular basis, they have to continue to have good earnings. Do you see any overlap, or do you think that these are similar?
No, I don't think they're similar at all. The dogs of the Dow are really the ones that have the highest dividend, because a lot of times they have underperformed, so their dividends are disproportionately higher over time. So they're buying stocks that have been out of favor, out of performance, that haven't been good performers. I like to focus on companies that are strong performers. They may not pay a dividend. In a lot of cases, they don't, because growth companies often want to reinvest back into the company, and it's only mature companies that tend to want to pay more of a dividend. So these are growth companies that are investing back in themselves, and they have earnings that are increasing each year. So it's very earnings focused, not dividend focused. So they're almost opposites in some case, in terms of the kinds of companies that you'd find that would be dogs of the Dow and the kinds of companies that I'd be interested in investing in.
Yeah. So as you look at your criteria, or you look at your rules of guidelines for investing, do you have any rules or guidelines that keep you from doing something super crazy when the market acts weird? Let's start with you, Linda. What kinds of things help you stay away from making a terrible, rash trade decision when things start getting weird in the market?
What do you mean by a terrible, rash trade decision? What do you mean by that?
I guess it goes along with the idea we've talked about in the past of, you know, when the market starts going down, you start freaking out about losses and selling. While it can make sense sometimes to sell in those positions, especially if you have a true dog or a true loser, or if you're looking for some sort of tax harvesting advantage, sometimes you just sell low and it's a terrible idea. So do you have any sort of guidelines that keep you from losing your head and panicking when the news gets bad?
I do. Well, I try to follow the macro market. So I'm following what's going on behind the scenes with currencies and countries and the Fed and interest rates and things like that. So I'm following the bigger picture. I'm also following cycles, which, you know, from time to time indicate that we're ready for a bigger drop. And that's the message I've been giving lately, is that we are ready for a bigger drop. I think we've made some lower highs since last July. And to me, that says that even though we're not in an official bear market yet, because we're not down 20%, I do think that the market is going lower because we continue to make lower highs. And in fact, today I just was looking at a chart, and this probably will air a few weeks after, but it looks like the market's about ready to roll over again. We've made another lower high. So right now I'm actually in cash waiting for a lower market, because I'm expecting a lower market. So I try not to get caught up in the ups and downs of the regular market, but I do also try to pay attention to when are we ready for a bigger drop. And I think that particular time is right about now. So I try to keep a cool head and just wade through some of the smaller ups and downs. They don't bother me so much. But when cycles are indicating there's something bigger on the horizon, then I want to pay attention to that.
Okay, yeah.
Hang on, guys. I have to go sell my portfolio now. One sec. You scared me, Linda.
What about you, Doug? Do you have any guidelines or rules that help keep you in track with your investing plan, or keep you from doing something rash?
So the doing something rash is I avoid that by having money managers handle it. And when I want to make an individual decision about one of the very, very, very few stocks or ETFs that I would buy on my own, I talk about it with my wife, who's also a Series 7 licensed advisor, and my kids, who just, gosh, they have an opinion about everything. But regardless of whether we make a committee decision, which we don't, just by talking about it, I think slows me down in order to really think about it some more. And the other way I try to avoid this is I really don't trade in companies that are nearing the going out of business sale because I'm looking to make 1,000 times on my money, because I've never seen anyone do that. I'll tend to trade in areas that are much, much bigger, either ETFs in major segments or companies that just, you know, are major players. So that if it drops, I can legitimately say that this really is a long-term investment and I can ride through it.
Yeah, that's a good point, that looking at the long-term and saying, am I going to be able to ride this out? And of course, we have to put in a plug for indexing, but that's one of the things that works for me is indexing and saying, oh, well, eventually this will all work out. So I think that's a good point to wrap us up here. Remember that you can check us out at moneytreepodcast.com. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. We love reading the reviews. We love hearing what you think about us, whether we're doing a good job, whether we can improve. Don't forget to email us your questions. We just had a question episode last week, and once again, we love having those every few weeks. It's fun to answer your questions and give you all of the bad advice that we can. And finally, remember that no one will take care of your money as well as you do, so remember to invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.